And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU FM. Unusual Sources is the program that brings you the stories and the people that you don't get to hear from in the corporate media. And we broadcast every Wednesday from 5 to 6 p.m. live here on Hamilton's CFMU 93.3 on the FM dial, as well as to the rest of the world at cfmu.mcmaster.ca, which is our online streaming site, which you can listen to with any computer that can catch that streaming from all across the world. So we're very pleased you could tune in today with us. We have quite a treat for you today. We're going to be speaking with, live here in the studio, Bill Mahoney, who is Local 1005's resident poet and a retired steelworker. Bill, you've come just in time. People are finally waking up to the reality that you've been describing for the past few years. On Bay Street soon, on Wall Street already, throughout cities in the United States, people are talking about injustice and economic inequality and war, and they're speaking up from their hearts about this problem, and you've been speaking from your heart for years now to the people in Hamilton, benefiting all the citizens across this city. And I think listeners are very privileged today because Brother Mahoney has been active at these Hamilton events that concern all of us, whether it be steel or the economy or those foreign wars. He's contributed to those rallies and speeches and gatherings. It's not a real protest in Hamilton unless Bill Mahoney is here. So thanks, Bill, for coming in today.
Oh, you're welcome.
You know, I shouldn't say it's not a real protest unless you're there, because even I've organized events and you haven't been able to be at every single one of them, so I wouldn't want to shoot myself in the foot there. But certainly, whether it be environmental issues, native rights, the anti-war movement, the pensioners, Stelco steel workers, the unions across the city, Bill has been a reliable fixture in those events, bringing them forward and catching the attention of the media quite often. You've been up to a lot in the last few years and in the past months. I did an internet search of you a few days ago to collect the latest materials, and just so much just from 2011, from May, from March, even this month. I remember you honored Jack Layton with a poem recently, and there's other things we can look into. But I guess people in Hamilton who have seen you speak at these events and these rallies might perhaps first be wondering how it is that you got into doing this in the first place. I mean, there's the whole thing about writing poems and then speaking to an audience. What came first? Were you writing poems first?
I was writing poems. My mother and my uncle were poets, and we were so poor when I was a kid, I joked that we had nothing to play with but words, so that's how I got into it. My first performance was in St. Catharines when Ralph Gerstenberger, our president, was speaking, and I had wrote a short poem about the bankruptcy. He got up and spoke, and then he says, "We have an old Irish poet in the crowd." I looked around not knowing who he meant and said, "Come on, Mahoney, get up here." So that was my first real recital, and it just went from there.
They say when you don't know who the sucker is, it's you. And but you're not the sucker in this case, because what you did was very brave. And I guess, but prior to that, you might have been a little leery about speaking in front of. How many people were there at the time?
There was probably 40 or 50. And Ralph said to me later, he says, "I didn't want to tell you beforehand because you'd be too nervous." But the next rally I spoke at, we had couple thousand people, and I've done a piece that's been very well received whenever it's done. It's titled "Our Town," and I'd like to recite that now.
Of course.
"Why is our elected class so happy-kissing corporate ass? They let them close the factory down, close up shop, desert our town. No more pensions, lower pay. They say it is a global way. There's nothing left for those who stay. No place to work, no time to play. Families lay awake at night. They toss and turn, fuss and fight. What once had been their simple dreams have turned to nightmares, so it seems. How will they tell their teenage son his dreams of college days are done? Best sell his car and buy a gun, 'cause life round here won't be much fun. No matter how hard they pray, no one comes to save the day. Some lose faith, some lose hope, some turn to booze and some to dope. The life they build on sweat and blood is being trampled in the mud. Our towns are dying bit by bit, and those in charge don't give a shit. They boldly sit on bloated asses and drink champagne from crystal glasses. Who will stand? Who will fight? Who'll raise a fist? Shout, this ain't right. Who'll build a world that's just and free if it's not those like you and me?" I wrote that in response to plant closures all across the country, in many cases devastating whole communities. Now, here in Hamilton, there's a group that seems to think that we can replace good-paying manufacturing jobs with jobs in tourism, and they're pushing Hamilton as a city of waterfalls. I was asked to write a response to that, and here it is. It's titled City of Waterfalls.
Sure, sure.
There's hardly any jobs at all, but come and see our waterfall. I'm not quite sure just where it went. It's somewhere under the cement. Ignore the closed-down factories and glowing welfare lines. Just look at our waterfalls. Everything is fine. If the hungry children cry, our mayor just says, diversify. We don't make things here anymore. All our plants have moved offshore. We'll just become a tourist trap and sell each other foreign crap. You can work in a coffee shop or sell tourist hot dogs and pop, or maybe be a tour guide and take the tourists for a ride. But don't show them where the homeless hide. I question the wisdom of these calls to base our future on waterfalls. The mayor should give his head a shake. This line of thinking he must break. Jobs with dignity for all. That should be our battle call.
Wow, that's not one, but two incredible poems. I think the City of Waterfalls evoked some of the Facebook discussions I had seen. That thing was all over Facebook once the city council came up with the City of Waterfalls thing. Everyone was trying to promote it as a new vision or a new future for Hamilton. But as your local 1005 has been so fond of pointing out, it's industry that creates the value. It's Canadian industry in your place of locality or where you live that creates products that you can sell, that generate income, that pay for taxes, that pay for services in the community. So you mentioned tourism and coffee shops, and it's an impossibility that you're referring to, because we can't all work in tourism or coffee shops. And already what's happening, and I just heard some reports from people I know in the United States, it's very difficult now in a tourism industry because people don't have money to spend going on vacations, because if you don't have a job, obviously you can't spend. So it's protecting jobs, protecting decent jobs, unionized jobs, jobs that produce things of value that can be exchanged, that your local and that works so hard on and that you've been a part of. I think your first poem that you read us today, Our Town, you wrote that, I imagine, several years ago, but it's something that could have been written today. It could have been written this week at the New York protest to Occupy Wall Street. It could be written this Saturday at the Occupy Bay Street protest. When did you write Our Town?
I wrote Our Town about 6 years ago, and it's as relative today, unfortunately, as it, more so than it was when I first wrote it.
Well, I think one of the things I'm trying to get across to our listeners, or that they might have picked up on if they've seen you at rallies before, is that you've been ahead of the curve on this issue. Because back in 2004, 2005, 2006 especially, and thereafter, you were bringing up the economic desolation and devastation of communities, of Hamilton, of the Rust Belt, of other industrial cities, and the hopelessness for youth and for many workers who are just trying to hold on. And no one wanted to talk about that for years, not under the last years of the Bush administration. Obama was trying to pretend it almost was not a reality. But there you were talking about this, and now other people have caught on to the extent that you have these movements across the world. So because of your engagement with steel and unionized workers and movements, you're able to see and articulate what was happening, certainly more quickly than any media institution across Canada or the United States.
I was going to say the corporate media certainly don't serve our interest, and it's not that they were blind to this, they simply chose to ignore it.
Yes, choices are very important. I think there's an intergenerational thing. I'm going to mention that in a moment, but just thinking back to Our Town, this was a significant, this was one of your first or your first? What was your first then that you gave to the 40 or 50 people?
It was a piece titled CCAA.
Yes.
And it's rather dated, but it basically spoke about us fighting in CCAA and basically being the only union that ever fought CCAA and didn't make concessions and come out unscathed.
Yes, for our listeners who may not be familiar with CCAA, it is something we've covered on this program for a number of years, especially with our co-host Peter Leibovich, and it is a process by which companies undergo bankruptcy and make certain applications to the government and other bodies. Stelco was placed under the CCAA years ago, and that had major implications for the pension plan and for the workers, and the various locals had to take a response to that. That's where we saw a lot of the action and a lot of the activity, and this is where people like Bill Mahoney got to come into the forefront by again, articulating the concerns of people, the kind of concerns that we're now seeing discussed in a more widespread fashion. In terms of our town, you talked about people having to turn to crime or communities losing the things that are precious to them and of value. I think on the one hand, that could be written about Hamilton, that the poem could be about Hamilton, but it seems to me it could be about every industrial city in North America that has lost its core.
I've got a piece here that I wrote about Hamilton, young people downtown on King and James. We've been leafleting downtown for a couple of years, and this piece is titled Johnny Wants a Job. Johnny's smart and kind of cool. He's doing very well in school. You won't catch Johnny smoking grass. He studies hard. He's going to pass. But tell me then, what will he do? Sell you coffee or shine your shoes? Our kids play by the rules. Then they're made to look like fools. Some are so poor they have to borrow just to make it through tomorrow. While the banker walks a crooked line. You know he should be serving time. But instead, he's doing fine. Not a worry on his mind. He's living in paradise. Never wears the same clothes twice. Driving a new Cadillac. Well, Johnny's living in a shack with just the clothes on his back. And you wonder why some deal crack? They need good jobs and better schools. We can't just treat our youth like fools. So my warning you'd best heed. Some will beg and some will plead, but some will make the rich man bleed if they don't get the jobs they need. And you're seeing that with the social upheaval all around the world. Basically, I feel young people don't see a place for themselves or a future for themselves.
The truth is, I think you're more young at heart than all of our youngest politicians because you have been connected with the crisis that youth have been facing in Hamilton and elsewhere that, again, has been largely ignored up until this point. And what you've described here, number one, youth play by the rules. And it's true. If you look at the statistics, up until very recently, crime rates have been at a historic low. Crime has been lower than ever. People are not engaged in the kind of violent crime that you'd associate with a recession or depression of any kind, although things are getting worse. And so youth have not been as engaged or active in criminal activity as has been expected in the past. They've been following the rules. So many youth have been doing what they were told, which is you got to go to college, you got to graduate high school, get a college or university degree so that you can get a job and be successful. And in order to go to college or university, of course, you need to rack up tens of thousands of dollars of debt. The current average debt is about $22,000. So let's say you play by the rules. You graduate high school, you go to college or university, you rack up $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 worth of debt, and then there's no jobs for you. I mean, what do you do then? The people that play by the rules have been punished because the rules are rigged against them. I think that's something you're familiar with, and the rules being rigged against people, because certainly the government, the corporate situation was not favoring the steel workers until you were fighting back against all of this.
Yeah, and we're still fighting. Now, I wrote a piece that kind of speaks to this injustice. I wrote it a number of years ago. It's titled On Bailouts. George Bush was still president, but I feel this piece is still relative to what's going on today. George Bush is saying they made some small mistakes, but he'll help his friends on Wall Street no matter what it takes. Unemployment's rising. Confidence is low. If you want to tell me something I don't know. There's no money for New Orleans to rebuild from the flood. Plenty for the rich when they slip in their own mud. No money for health care or for crumbling schools. Plenty for the rich when they act like greedy fools. If you get evicted, they don't give two hoots. They've still got their pensions and golden parachutes. More and more are homeless, go hungry every day. Yet the bankers tell us there is no better way. If a poor man robs a bank, they hunt him day and night. When the rich steal billions, some think that that's all right. To give money to bankers to cure the country's ills is like trying to cure starvation by taking diet pills.
Trying to cure starvation by taking diet pills. I mean, that has described and prefigured the austerity we're currently living in. The idea that governments need to cut budgets, they need to cut health care, they need to cut social programs, that workers need to take a cut, they need to take lower wages, they need to get rid of benefits. And why? We all know why. So that Wall Street, so that the fat cats can sit on their piles of money that they've been holding on to, not lending out if they're banks, or hoarding for themselves if they're corporations. We know how it works. There's a few things I would focus on in terms of this poem. It was written under the Bush era, as you say. It was written under George Bush, just around the time of the bailouts. And this was your response to that bailout, because if you looked at Main Street USA, so many Americans were infuriated when they learned that billions of dollars had been given to bail out banks that had made bad investments. And many people mailed or emailed or phoned their Congress representative to the point where answering machines were flooded and overflowing with angry phone calls about that. People were very angry, but the bailout went ahead. George Bush went ahead with the bailout, and then President Obama went ahead with the bailout, and we were supposed to just drop that, forget about it, and move on. But if the banks have been bailed out and no one else has been bailed out, we have a continuing problem. New Orleans has been flooded. We're all underwater in terms of our mortgages, our money, and so on. I'm starting to wonder if it's something that is particular to being in a city like Hamilton that has seen what globalization has wrought, that puts you ahead of the game in terms of describing these things. Because we have seen the employment levels at Stelco and similar companies be static or fall, while our own corporations and North American corporations contract out much more of that to overseas production because of wages and because they wish to avoid environmental regulations and unions. So we've seen that. We're at ground zero. We're in the Rust Belt, aren't we?
We certainly are. And, I mean, I question, like, who's next. And I wrote this. The inspiration was there was a man sitting quietly with his hat on the ground at King and James in front of the bank, and he got a ticket, basically, for being poor. So I wrote this piece. A man got a ticket just for being poor. The cop said he was standing too near the banker's door. Tell me how that helps even out the score. Do they think that making the poor stay out of sight will somehow fix our problem, make everything all right? The real crime that's being committed, of this I have no doubt, is in this land of plenty, so many go without. The bankers should be locked up for causing so much pain. They care not who they hurt, only what they gain. There's no work at the factories. There's no work at the mills. Every time I hear it, it just gives me the chills. Unemployment all around me. I don't know what to say. More of my neighbors lost their jobs today. They won't be buying houses, fridges, or new cars. They won't be going out to restaurants or the bars. Harper says unemployment's only 9%? Go and tell that to my neighbors when their savings have all been spent. He says he'll help out Bay Street and things will be just fine as more and more workers join the welfare line. For far too many, the good life is slipping out of reach. Soon there'll be many more living in the streets. No more of Harper's bullshit. No more of Flaherty's lip. It's time we gave the Tories their own bloody pink slip. Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we had that chance in the federal election, and the people that bothered to vote chose the vote Tory.
Well, there's an example of sticking your head in the sand. I think it was some of the non-Hamilton areas in the 905 belt that were voting in the Tories in this particular instance. They thought they could weather this economic storm or that they would be insulated. But nobody is going to be insulated. Canada, as a country, will not be insulated. It is not being insulated. And you can go right up from all of the ordinary people and workers, people that got to work for a living, up to your professionals, middle classes. They're feeling the heat now. It's just going to keep going up, except for that 1% that the Wall Street movement talks about. So it's not a problem that anyone could ignore. It's clear fairness has been a concern of yours here. And I just recalled that yesterday I read a story of how I believe it was a homeless person stole $100 and was sentenced to the longest sentence that could possibly be given to that homeless person. And this is not the first time such things have happened. There's the three strikes laws in the United States and so forth. Now, it was pointed out on a Twitter feed by a commentator on one of the Democrat underground or Democrat affiliated feeds that with the arrests of the Wall Street protesters, more people have been protested for resisting Wall Street's corruption than were actually arrested for bringing down the whole world economy or for the corruption involving billions of dollars in fraudulent mortgages and betting against those mortgages and so forth. So none of those criminal bankers have gone to jail. None of that criminal class has had to face any sort of justice. And that's why people are on the streets right now trying to demand that justice.
Yeah, and that's great. But and you have to get on the street, but we need people working in Parliament as well. People have to study what the parties stand for and get out and vote. The rich vote in large numbers, because They know that voting makes a difference. Now, I wrote a piece titled Democracy's Garden. It was, why should you vote? Why should you care? Taste the water, smell the air. The evidence is everywhere. The melting of the polar cap, the poison flowing from your tap. Shady deals and dirty deeds, democracy's gardens full of weeds. Politicians you can't trust, who eat until their bellies bust. Not one of them would say no more as they marched us off to another war. Kids without enough to eat, protesters beaten in the street. Seniors forced to use food banks, soldiers riding in new tanks, crumbling schools where kids can't read, crowded emergency wards where patients bleed, unemployment and despair. The evidence is everywhere. Please vote, but choose well, or watch your country go to hell.
Wow. There's some things to say about that and move on to. I think what you said about politicians and elections already with the conservatives winning in the federal election, it's important to remember that in the current provincial election that just happened, the voter turnout has been at record lows. So there's been more people feeling detached from the system or that thinking that they're not being represented adequately, that they're not taking part in the process, which is why this renewal has to take place right now, with more people starting to get involved and get involved for themselves. As you said, the wealthy vote, and statistics have proven that, that people that the higher income they have, the more property they own, the degree of involvement with government and parts of the community, the more they participate in elections. People that feel excluded have not been participating as much, and now we're starting to see a change in that, and more people that have felt excluded need to participate. And this kind of a special coverage that we're doing with Bill Mahoney, obviously, it's something that you don't hear on these pirate-financed corporate programs that have been turning a blind eye to Wall Street, that have been mocking these growing movements. This is something that you get from community radio. We're just going to take a short break just to mention, again, the importance of having programs like CFMU here on 93.3. We have a little bit of a promotional offer that's been running across. We're going to learn about that very briefly. Then we're going to come back and learn more about how Bill became involved in this very special sort of activism. And we're back here on Unusual Sources and our special interview with Bill Mahoney at this time of upheaval, at this time of Wall Street uprising and occupation and the coming Occupy Bay Street event this Saturday. And we're talking about the economic devastation that has been unleashed on Hamilton and much of North America and the world and what people are doing to stand up against that. Bill Mahoney is someone who stood up very early, took a lot of bravery and courage, someone who had obviously developed poetic talent, but now it was being utilized or presented towards workers and ordinary people so that we as a community could benefit from this talent. And I'm wondering, Bill, I mean, you mentioned your first reading of poetry and your upbringing as a child, words were your toys. How did you come to develop your talent? And obviously it was integrated or became part of your experience as a steel worker. So how does that happen?
That happens because I had the support of, I was fortunate enough to be a union member involved in 1005. As most of you may know, is very active in the community. Ralph, our president, was very supportive. Our members were very supportive, and a lot of people in the community once they heard my work. So I've been fortunate, really, because I'm sure there's a lot of good poets who just never get the opportunity to be heard.
As far as I know, 1005 must be the only local in Ontario that has a resident poet.
As far as I know, so.
But you've been part of so many things as a result of this. I know that as a steelworker, you've experienced work in the plant. You've experienced union activity and union meetings. You've been part of other things, too. I mean, there's a clear respect for life or a love for the earth and life in your poetry, and the environment is a major factor. So you have such diverse interests. All of this comes to play when these politicians are coming around, when these events are happening, when elections are occurring, and when events in the community are happening. So you've been, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, you had given a eulogy or a recognition of Jack Layton. And I remember I saw you speak when Andrea Horvath was touring by in the summer. So how do you come into contact with some of the politicians or some of the movements? Are you able to show them your poetry and contribute in that way?
I'm often asked now to speak at some of these things, and people even call the hall because they've heard me speak and like my work. And so call and ask for me, and I'll try to find something that'll suit them. And occasionally, I've written some special. I was asked to do a piece on for Injured Workers Day by a friend of mine. It's a short piece I'd like to read, An Injury to One. Support the injured workers. Heed them when they call. An injury to one is an injury to all. Far too many are injured when they go to work. Then the boss denies their injury, says that they're not hurt. Owners of industry are greedy and mean. They value workers far less than a machine. When Jeannie had her accident, they said she was a fake, even though her x-ray showed a major break. Could you kindly tell me, what more does it take? The board wants to retrain Mary, send her back to school. But she's been away so long, she feels like a damn fool. She knows that she could learn new skills if they just give her the time. But they want to fast-track her, just to save a dime. Since George had his accident, he's confined to a wheelchair. People look right through him, as if he wasn't there. His wheelchair has become a rolling prison cell, as the compensation board is putting him through hell. Far too many workers have been forced to fight just to get the benefit that ought to be their right.
Now, I seem to remember you reading this. Was that at one of the large steel worker gatherings?
No, that was for the day of the mourning for injured workers killed and injured on the job.
Ah, that's a yearly event, yeah. And it's something that needs to have more attention brought to it, which you have done. I didn't know you could produce these on request. I thought
It's not quite as easy as that. some people seem to think it is. Some of them seem to flow when I'm not, and others I really struggle with.
It's not easy at all to do this. Writing a poem is something that you need to work on. It's revised over and over again. You have to sound things out, and it has to come from inspiration. And in some cases, what you hear from others, what they're wanting or demanding, can inspire you, but you still have to go through that process. It's not something you can put out on an assembly line, certainly. You have experience with repetitive and regular factory work, on the other hand, although that's something that requires the worker thinking a lot more than is generally acknowledged. You have given special focus to the years or decades of activism at Stelco by the unions, the kind of activism that's been keeping up or propping up a lot of unions in the city, or wages in general in a lot of sectors. A lot of struggle and a lot of sacrifice has come from the Stelco workers. And I understand, and I remember this, that you gave a reading on the spirit of 46. And there's a little bit I'd like to know about that, but I know we have it here. And why don't you read that out for us?
Sure. From the struggle of 46, the spirit still lives on, though many of our veterans are dead and gone. They fought for social justice and for workers' rights. 65 years later, we still fight the fights. They fought for decent wages, benefits, and a pension plan, a working life with dignity for each woman and man, showing the way for others right across the land. Now, all across the country, workers are under attack. Without a strong union, how could you fight back? Companies want your dignity. Companies want your pride. How would you fight the bastards with no one on your side? Would you go crawling on your hands and knees to the foreign masters to do with as they please? Companies want your loyalty and your sweat and blood. But when your working days are over, they dump you in the mud. For all the gains we have made, we fought long and hard. If we now give up an inch, the company'd want a yard. U.S. Steel said buying us would be a benefit. They've been here for 3 long years. We ain't seen it yet. They want to rob the elderly. They want to rob the young. They'll try to do it with a pen if they can't use a gun. 1005 stood up to them. That's something that they hate. So on November 7th, they locked up the gate. We are proud steel workers from Local 1005. They can't steal our dignity. They can't steal our pride. We're going to stand up and fight back all the way. When you mess with 1005, you have hell to pay. We'll have many stories to tell to our kids of time spent on the picket line and when we held the bridge. When future generations talk about the fight, they'll say we had the courage to stand up for what is right.
Well, that's very powerful. And isn't that true, that the companies want to work you into the mud? They want to use you up, and then they don't want to give you those benefits that you work for, that you earned, that you negotiated, and are something that you actually own. So that's something that Stelco has gone through, something that the steel workers are very familiar with, and now many Americans are having to deal with that too. again, that is stunning, and I think it is a treasure to have this kind of material available. It's about time for us to wrap up, but The Spirit of 46, I think, is one of your most important poems. And I'm just wondering, what to you does The Spirit of 46 mean? What is the spirit of 46 for Hamilton and for Stelco?
The Spirit of 46 is standing up to injustice and saying, no, this is wrong. I am willing to take a stand. Now, I wonder what kind of world we're going to leave to our kids. And a friend of mine had a baby a couple of years ago. I wrote this. If we have time, I'd like to do this one last piece.
Of course.
Titled Welcome Layla. When you were born into this world, you arrived without a care. Till you drank the polluted water, smelled the poisoned air. Why'd they let this happen? Don't big people care? You'll demand an answer as you hug your teddy bear. Why is there injustice, poverty, and war? You'll demand an answer and a whole lot more. By the time you read this, I may well have died. Although the battle rages on, please know how hard some tried. Don't give up the struggle. Don't abandon hope. For our strength is in our struggle, as somebody wrote. You will build a new world from the ashes of the old when you overturn the tables and divide the rich man's gold.
Wow, well, we know that people in this generation and in previous generations have had the choice to either let things happen, let things like George Bush happen, let things like the CCAA try to plow down companies, or we can fight against it. We can create a better world and fight and struggle for that. And you've done that, and this is what you're trying to inspire people to do, to rise up, to rebel. So is there anything you'd like to say to that before we go?
Yes, I'd like to do a piece I wrote to honor the sisters in the struggle. It's titled Rebel Woman. And women are taking a leadership role in the movement. And this is, I wrote this for International Women's Day a couple of years ago. I read it at a rally. See her fist raised in the air. She's one of us who really care. Hear her quoting from Karl Marx. She has guts and she has smarts. Justice, freedom, human rights. She'll be there to lead the fights. I'll follow her to hell and back if I don't have a heart attack. You'll see her standing bravely on the protest line. There's no one who can scare her. She's as tough as she is kind. She'll join you in your struggle. You know she feels your pain. She'll tell you that the system's just a rich man's game. She's fighting for justice and equality for all. When we bring the system down, she'll be there to help the fall.
We have to think about the future. We have to think about the people that are bringing up the new generations. And you see what Bill is telling you, that Bill is going to be out there. He's going to be fighting. He's going to be on the front lines as always. Are you going to be there? Are you going to be in Toronto on Saturday? Are you looking at the Hamilton organizing? There is more actions and activity to come. So you need to be there. We need to follow Bill's lead and follow Bill's example. And this is great work you've been doing for the last several years on this, and you've brought so much to Hamilton and the community. So, Bill, I want to thank you once again so much for being on our program today.
Thank you. It was a privilege.